Yes, we're in Parshat Re. In Parshat Re, we're moving along in our Sefer Devarim study. There is going to become a major focus. And as we get there, I'm going to point it out. Let's just start in the first source, Perakut Aleph. Vaya ki viacha Hashem alakecha el haaretz asher taba Hashem alarishta v'natat et habracha al haragizim v'etekla al har ival. So it speaks about a ritual that's going to take place, and it gives us a location for the ritual, which will be by Har Gerizim and Har Eval. Pasuk Lamed explains a little bit more where they are, someplace in the vicinity of Elonei Moreh, and why this place, why it's chosen in terms of ongoing holiness or temporary holiness. But one thing which is interesting is that one particular place is chosen in order to have one particular ritual. It continues, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Ki etem ovrim et yarden, lavo lereshet et haaretz asher Hashem Elokeichem noten lachem, v'yirishtem ota v'yishtaftem ba. So again, it speaks about crossing over and the land which God has given us. This is special land, inherited, to settle within it. Ushmartem la'asot et kol hachukim ve'et ha'mishpatim asher enochi noten lefneichem hayom. Then it speaks of, and I want to be a little bit careful here, Ushmartem, you should guard, la'asot, in order to perform, et kol hachukim, all of our statutes, v'et ha'mishpatim, and the laws, asher anochi noten lefneichem hayom, which I am putting in front of you today. Now, again, this should not come as any great surprise. Along the way, from the beginning of Sefer Devarim, we've been warned about certain things, rejection of the land of Israel, we've been warned about mistakes that we've made in the past. Rejection will take us to the chait of the sin of the Meraglim. On the other hand, the other kinds of sins we've done in the past include the chait ha'egel. So therefore, what we have is rejection of Israel, rejection of God, and the focus particularly on those two areas. And now we're told to go into the land and to follow our chukim and our mishpatim. In Perek Yud Bet, which is really the continuation, Pasuk Aleph says, "Eila hachukim v'mishpatim asher tishmaru lasot," which means you realize now that when it ended up with Perek Yud Aleph by telling us to guard the chukim v'mishpatim, now it's telling us what they are. So this should make things incredibly clear. "Eila hachukim v'mishpatim asher tishmaru lasot ba'aretz asher natan Hashem elokei avotecha l'cha l'rishta." It's also interesting how it's phrased, not just God, Lord your God, the God of your ancestors, kol hayamim asher atem chayim al adama, which means the land works by certain rules. If you follow these rules, then you will be able to have this land. If you don't follow these rules, then your stay in this land is going to be one which will be, let's call it challenging, compromised. It then starts off to tell us what we may do, and just to make this a little bit easier, we're told that we need to follow our chukim. We're going to stay with which is the majority opinion. I'm not going to say the universal opinion that a chok versus a mishpat, a chok is something we don't know the reason for, or the reason is something we would not have anticipated. Chokim can very much work on symbolic levels. Mishpatim are something which are logical laws. The mishpatim are the ones that we all would have basically figured out together, not to murder, not to steal, not to do things like that. And the chukim are the things that we would not have necessarily have figured out by ourselves, but it says that we need to keep our chukim. And then look at Pasuk Bet. Abed ta'abdun et kol ha'makamot asher avdu sham ha'goyim asher atem yoshim otam et Eloheihim. That we need to get rid of all the places where they've worshipped their foreign alien gods. Ala harim haramim val gva'ot v'tachat kol etz ra'anan. So here it speaks about on every high place, on every mountain, on every hill, and underneath every leafy tree. So one of the things, and we've discussed this many times, one of these things about idolatry is that it was always readily available. There were multiple gods, multiple places, and all kinds of places were used to worship all kinds of idolatry. So one of the things we're told is, oh, you need to go in and to destroy it. It's at this point that I'll note that there is a difference between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laretz on this point, which means if you live in Brooklyn or in Queens, then there's no obligation to destroy. If you happen to have bought a tree which has an Asherah tree, you know, some idolater owned your house beforehand, then you have to destroy it if it's your property. But there's no mitzvah to go searching for it. On the other hand, in Israel, we're told, you want to enter the land, you're going to enter the land, you must rid the land of this alien worship, and you must get rid of all of these places. V'nitatztem et mizbechotam, v'shibartem et matzevotam, v'ashreihem tisrefun ba'esh, u'psilei Eloheihem tigadeun, v'ibaratem et shmam min ha'makom mahu. So, pretty, you know, in depth, each and every type of idolatry that you need to get rid of, and you need simply to cleanse the place of this type of worship. And then it ends the pasuk, which deserves a lot of attention, which we're not going to give it. Lo ta'asu kein la'Hashem Elokeichem. But to God, don't do this. There are those who will understand from this that you're not allowed to erase God's name. So where does that come from? You can't erase. It says, oh, so even like a microcosm, by them you have to destroy all the idolatry, but by God you can't even erase the name. Rashi will bring that. So if you're ever wondering where the source is, that this may well be the source for this. On the other hand, Rashi also brings another teaching from the Sifri, where he says, don't do anything which will cause the Beit HaMikdash to be destroyed. So you need to destroy all of their holy places, but you can't destroy our holy place. How do we destroy our holy places? By doing Gili Arayot, Tvichat Amim, Avodah Zarah. That means that by extension, don't do any of the things which will result in the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. And I find that to be a very interesting comment over here. But meanwhile, it's making this contrast that entering into the land of Israel means that it's going to become a new kind of place. All of those Chukim HaMishpatim which existed over there need to be cleansed. And that's part of your responsibility, is to get, which means this isn't even saying yet that you shouldn't be following their practices. It's saying much more than that. It's saying that the places where they do their practices need to be gotten rid of, and certainly, you know, following their practices is going to be inappropriate. Anyway, it says, "Lo tasu kein l'Hashem Elokeichem, ki im ela makom sheyivchar Hashem Elokeichem mikol shifteichem lasum et shmo sham l'shechnu tidrushu v'atashama." Now, that was also a mouthful, and this also needs our attention, which means that there have been actually a couple of levels of contrast, which was introduced here. One is the obvious, and that is that all the places where idolatry is worshipped need to get rid of, and but we need to then to find the place to worship one God. But it's not just idolatry versus monotheism, it's also multiple places versus one place. What I mean by that is if they had altars on all kinds of, that means to get rid of those altars. But again, what's interesting here is Lo tasu kein l'Hashem Elokeichem, the actual context is not necessarily not to destroy those. I mean, that's only if you pause right there. If you continue reading, Lo tasu kein l'Hashem Elokeichem, don't serve God that way. Ki'im ela makom l'shevchar Hashem. Just have to read the next verse. Rather, how do you serve God? Not under every leafy tree, not on every single hill, not on every single mountain. How do you serve God? Ki'im el hamakom asher yivchar Hashem. So just like we are a chosen people, b'chira, and the land of Israel is a chosen place, there will be within the land of Israel a specific chosen place, ki'im el hamakom, and I want to stay on that word, hamakom, the place, ki'im el hamakom asher yivchar Hashem elokeichem, mikol shevchem, l'sum et shmo sham, that God's place will be associated with that particular place, l'shichno tidrushu uvatashama. Now, l'shichno tidrushu is also a fascinating turn of phrase. L'shichno means to the Shechina or to the Mishkan. L'shichno tidrushu, it means that one should search out this place, uvatashama, and go to that place. Now, again, notice the word shama, sham, hamakom, sham, shama. Instead of all the different places, that's the place that you need to go and to bring the things which are holy. Means that's the place that you're going to then celebrate the various holidays. Lo ta'asun kichol asher anachnu simpo yom ish kol hayashar beinav. it shouldn't be a situation where everyone does whatever they believe to be correct. Ki lo vatem adatayel menucha v'nachala, Hashem Elokechem noten lach, because as of this point, we still haven't gotten to the right place. Vavartem et hayarden, now going back to where we started today, you're going to pass over the Yarden. V'yashavtem ba'aret Hashem Elokechem manchil etchem, you're going to the place that God will give you as inheritance. And at some point, all the wars will come to an end, and you're going to sit in a settled sense. Now it goes back to that phrase again. So it goes back again in a contrast to the idolaters. Again, that's why I'm saying there's two levels. One is that they worship all kinds of gods. Two, they worship in all kinds of places. So over here, we worship one God, but we only worship in one place. And that one place is this makom. So now you realize what really is the focus, and to a great extent, this will be something going throughout Parshat Re'eh. It will be about that place, including all the holidays towards the end. It will be about serving God in that particular place. This is the place that you bring the offerings. This is the place that the holidays. This is the place. It continues and it makes an interesting allowance. Just pasuk yedalad ki ima kol mashiv chara shem b'chad shiftecha sham ta'ale olotecha v'sham ta'aseh kol asher anochi mitzaveka. That in that place which God will choose, that's where you'll bring the korban, the ola. You cannot bring. It can't be that every tribe will have their own place. Every tribe may very well not may. Every tribe can have their own court system. Every city can have their own court, but not everyone can have their own, I don't want to say their own shul, but not everyone can have their own mizbeach to go and bring their offerings. That is one centralized place, which obviously unites everyone because there is one place, one God, one people, one place, and that's how we serve, not like the way that the idolaters have worshipped. And again, multiple gods, multiple places. Here is one place. And that really is the focus. The focus is Hamakom, L'shichno Tidrushu, Uvata Shama. It's this one location which has been focused upon. We then get to a bit of a side point, but okay, the Korban Ola could be in every place. Rak b'kol avat nafshecha tizbach v'chalta basar ki berkat Hashem lakecha shenatan lacha b'chol sha'arecha. But when a person desires or wants to eat meat, so this is talking about non-Kodesh meat. It's talking about a non-Korban meat. And you want to eat b'kol sha'arecha in any of your cities. You want to eat it. So it says, Atamei v'tahor yochlenu katzvi ka'ayil rak adam lo tochelu ala aret tishpachenu kamayim. And the continuation over here very much sounds that the blood can't be eaten, really, not because the blood's not kosher. The blood's not kosher because the blood was part of the Mizbeach service whereby the blood was put on the Mizbeach, and that's something which has no place on outside of Mizbeach, which means that even though we've been told for a while now, if you want to go all the way back at least to the Korban Pesach, that meat is something which we are permitted to eat. Certainly Kodshim. So you have a Korban Ola where the whole thing is burnt, but then you have certain things, Korban Shlamim and others, things that you can eat. But I'm saying at least going back to the Korban Pesach, we have offerings that people are eating. But now the question comes up, what about eating meat, which is in a non-Kodesh way? So over here we find, that you could eat this to your heart's desire. I'm using that particular turn of phrase. It's not so far from what it said. Rak bekol avat nafshecha. Avat is ta'ava. Bekol avat nafshecha, the desire. Your heart's desire, your soul's desire, if you prefer. To your soul's desire, which actually may be a stronger point. I saw this week that somebody, I won't mention his name, one can search, a rabbi who's known, just now published a book on vegetarianism and Judaism in Hebrew. A number of books in English, which he admitted afterwards he was not aware of the full scope of all of these books. Without going into any of his sources, I will just say that if somebody were to tell me that they are a non-religious vegetarian, I understand that 100%. But when someone's going to try to convince me that this is the religious ideal, so I'll say for every source that somebody can find, I can find a counter source, which means if someone's going to say, but look at this Gemara, okay, but look at that Gemara, but look at this, okay, but look at that. You know, look, it's not something which is 100% clear. And the problem with these things is then you tend to try to read them into the sources. Years ago, I actually gave a talk about eating meat on this week's Parsha, and afterwards I received an email from somebody who wrote one of these books in English on Judaism and vegetarianism. And his point was, among others, that Adam and Eve were vegetarians. And I wrote back to him, and they also walked around naked. What's your point? Which means, what? I'm saying, like, just explain to me why that's really a point which is relevant. Right over here, in entering the land of Israel, we're told that despite the fact that we have central service and central worship and central place where we serve God, when it comes to eating meat, you eat to your heart's desire. So that you know, sounds like a pretty strong hashkacha, if you will. And I understand the claims, by the way, and I also had a whole discussion about this at some point. The other agenda is to show all the people that were vegetarians or believed in vegetarianism. And one of them is Rav Kook, who's been a victim. No, he was victimized. Rav Kook was a victim. Rav Yitzchok was not a vegetarian. And nonetheless, he authored a book on vegetarianism, which he never authored. But rather, his son and one of his students, Rav David Cohen, the Nazir, they cut and pasted from all kinds of Cook's writings and created a book on vegetarian, the view of vegetarianism, which, by the way, Rav Kook actually felt that vegetarianism was very dangerous in the modern world, and he's writing this, he died in 1935. He said, the Europeans will end up valuing animals more than they value human life. Which was very, he goes, therefore, this is an ideal that should not be in a messianic age. But another thing that he writes about the messianic age is the reason for vegetarianism is not because it's healthy or not. He writes that in the messianic age, where knowledge will fill the world, and then it says the lamb will lie with the lion and so on and so forth. He goes, so obviously animals will get to a higher level of intelligence. So if animals on a higher, meaning if all of mankind, let's say Homo sapiens, understand cognitively that there is a God, so we've gone to a higher level. So he says now all the animals, all the knowledge and wisdom has now spread out throughout all of creation. Therefore, animals are no longer animals, and therefore it's no longer appropriate to eat animals. Which means Rav Kook is actually speaking about an evolution, but not an evolution of man to the extent that we will now know that eating meat is bad and therefore to be a vegetarian, but rather because animals are no longer animals and they have evolved into a higher species, and therefore it's inappropriate. So it is really interesting to read Rav Kook and to see to what extent this applies today. He himself, I believe, did not eat meat during the week, but he did eat meat on Shabbat. But one of the interesting things about his son, Rav Tzvi Yehuda, who was a vegetarian, when Rav Kook was stuck in England, he was stuck during World War I, first in Switzerland, and then he made it to England, and he wrote a letter to Tzvi Yehuda. I mean, there's a whole bunch of correspondence who Tzvi Yehuda was stuck in Israel. And one of the things that he strongly encourages him is to learn how to become a shochet, is that a rabbi needs to know certain things, and one of them is he needs to know how to do shechita. So Rav Kook writing, again, I cannot guarantee you that Rav Tzvi Yehuda at that point was a vegetarian, but I can tell you that the so-called vegetarian Rav Kook, the father, is encouraging his son, who is a vegetarian, to learn how to do shechita. So I think I think that is at least interesting. But the introduction over here, and that's the point I don't want to miss out, the introduction over here of eating meat is within the service of the Mishkan, of the centralized worship, as a something, meaning I can actually make the argument that eating meat is something which is quite holy based upon this, and God gives us this, just like he gives us permission to eat the korbanot, he gives us permission to eat something which is really regulated for a korban on outside, which means the real worship of God will only take place in this particular place, but when it comes to the eating of the meat, God is saying, I'm allowing you to eat it in other places. If you want Pasuk Tet Vav again, Rak b'kolavat nafshecha tizbach v'yachalta basar ki birkat Hashem elokecha shenatan lecha b'chol sharecha. You can eat according to the blessing that God has given you in all of your gates. pasuk that zayin rak hadam lo tochelu, the blood don't eat. Ala aretz tishprechenu kimayim lo tochal le'achol b'sharecha ma'aser digancha. Also, in all of the places you can't eat ma'aser. Rather, the ma'aser v'kol nederecha and the vows that you make ki im lefnei Hashem alokecha tochlenu b'makom asher yivchar Hashem. So that phrase comes out again that you need to eat certain things which now do have a level of holiness, and this is created holiness. Not in a completely organic sense, but something which either because it was made to be ma'aser or was made to be a neder, these things should be eaten in this particular place. Makom asher yivchar Hashem alokecha bo ata uvincha uvitecha avdecha v'matecha v'levi asher b'sharecha. So again, this whole group together, family, extended family, v'samachta lefnei Hashem. And therefore, again, central worship in this particular place. And be sure not to leave the Levi out, is Pasuk Yotet. Pasuk Kaf again goes to this broadening of the place. Ki archiv Hashem lakechud gvul lecha, kasher dibel lach, v'mar tochla ochla basar, ki tave nafshecha lechol basar, b'chol levat nafshecha tochal basar. So again, it comes back to this point, that you want to eat meat, and you're long ways from the Beit HaMikdash, ki rechak memcha hamakom meshivchar Hashem, you're far away from the place that God has chosen, Hashem lakecha lesum shemo sham, v'zavachta mi b'karecha mitzoncha shenatan lecha kasher tziviti, v'yachalta b'sharecha b'chol levat nafshecha. You can eat in all of your cities, that's sharecha, according to, again, avat nafshecha, according to the desires of your hearts. Ach kasher yeyachel et tzviyat ayol, kein tochleinu, atamei v'tor yechdav yochleinu, rak Chazak levoti achol hadam. It goes back to the dam. Ki hadam hu anafesh. But lo tochal anafesh ima basar. Lo tochlenu ala aretz tishpachenu kamayim. Again, focusing on this blood that can't be. Lo tochlenu leman yitev lechal vanecha acharech kiasei yashar b'nei Hashem. Rak kadshecha asher yu lecha unederecha tisa uvatel makom mishivcha Hashem. Going back and saying, no, only regarding kadshim, things which are holy, shall be eaten in this holy place. Vasita olotecha basar v'hadam al mizbeach Hashem alkecha v'dam zvachecha yishapech al mizbeach Hashem alkecha v'basar tochel. So again, in my mind, this very, very clear comparison by saying that, and again, I'm saying very clear. You can argue with me if you want. To me, it's fascinating because it's introducing the eating of meat as a non-korban experience. Nonetheless, there is the contrast with the korban experience whereby, yeah, you can eat it, but don't eat the blood. But why don't eat the blood? Oh, because by kudshim, the blood gets taken to the mizbeach and gets put on the mizbeach. So the blood, I'm not allowing you to eat because the blood is something which anyway should have gone to the mizbeach. So therefore, spill it on the ground and don't take that. The meat you can have, but you can't have the blood. So again, you could say that I'm overstating this. I'm not. But you could say that I'm overstating this. But the introduction of the eating meat is within the context of the chosen place of serving one God and serving one God in particular ways. Right. So that's a really good point, because that would then be why the parasha then continues and talks about which are the kosher or the non-kosher animals, which are then introduced. Where, you know, you could have claimed that the only animals we can have are for the korban. And therefore, or alternatively, then you could have claimed that when it comes to mizbeach, that's where I have to be careful about kosher. But a non-mizbeach, then I can eat anything. So I'm just saying, there is something interesting over here by saying no, that the mizbeach is treated in one way. The non-mizbeach, and yes, there are things which we can eat, which would not necessarily be put on a mizbeach, but nonetheless, the fact the kosher laws are put over here almost makes it sound, again, by the way, now you realize what I'm doing, I'm really making like this anti vegetarianism argument and saying that eating meat itself is part of serving God with my soul in a non-mizbeach place in a way which God allows, even though it's not serving God under every leafy tree, on every single hill, on every single mountain. So it's very interesting that that's the context why all of this is introduced. And I'll say it again, one could have argued that all of kosher laws should only have existed in terms of Mizbeach, but not in terms of our own plates. And that, no, we have to be careful what we can eat, what we can't eat. And that's also interesting why that's being introduced at this particular point. Again, it goes into this contrast and the Mizbeach and the blood and so on. He shamer lecha pen tinakesha charem acharech medem penecha. Right, again, it goes back to this point of getting rid of the idolatry. Towards the end of verse 2, lo tasa ken lashem elokecha ki kol to'avat Hashem asher sanei asu le'lohehim ki gam et b'nehim ve'et b'noteihim yisrafu be'esh le'lohehim. Going back to these chukim of these others, which is really an interesting contrast. Over here, one of the things that I had stressed back in Pasuk Kaf Hey, it's not the only one, where it says that rather you go, when it comes to the Kodshim, then you go to the holy place and you celebrate, but what does it say? L'man yitev lecha ulevanecha, together with your children, acharecha, together with your children. Also in Pasuk Yudchet, before that, ata uvencha uvitecha, v'avdecha v'matech v'levi shabasharecha, which means, again, it talks about the celebration in the larger family unit. And then towards the end of this section, when it says, you know, don't follow all of these chukim, don't do what they did. We need to serve God properly in that place that was chosen. That's Pasuk Kavav. Vasita lotecha basav adam ala mizbeach, and the blood has to be on the mizbeach. Shmor v'shamat et kol advirma eila, shonochi mitzavcha laman yitav lacha ulavanecha. Things should be good for you and your children. Notice the focus on the children. Acharech ad olam. Ki taseh tov v'yashar b'nei Hashem. Right? Don't do things that you want. Ki achrit Hashem elokecha et agayim asher tabasham elereshet otam mipanecha. Because you're coming to take the land away from the people, that the inhabitants who have been here. Otam v'yarashta otam v'yashavta ba'artzam. And you've inherited it from them. Now, the word inherited is very interesting, because I could have said the whole time that we've inherited the land of Israel because God promised it to Avram, to Yitzchak, to Yaakov, so we've inherited. V'yarashta utam, you're inheriting them. Now, normally, who inherits somebody? Normally, the children will inherit somebody. So just now continue two more psukim here. He shamer lecham pen nakesh achareim, acharei shamdam mipanecha, upen tedrosh le'elohim. Be careful after you get rid of them, you don't follow their practice, le'mar. Eicha yavdu agayim ha'ela et Eloheihem ve'aser kein gam ani. That saying, okay, this land of Israel, right, was a Canaanite land, let's go follow the Canaanite gods. Let's go, I mean, those are the natural gods of this place, maybe I should do what they do. Don't do that. Lo tasek kein la'ashem elokecha. Remember before also, lo tasek, right? Don't do like this to God. And I said, really, the context, the larger context is don't worship God the same way that that these alien gods are worshipped. Lo tasakin l'Hashem elokecha, ki kol ta'avat Hashem asher sanei asu l'Elohim, because these people, they serve God in a way which is detestable to God. Asher sanei oso l'Elohim, ki gam et banehim v'benoteim yisrafu ba'esh l'Elohim. And these people ended up burning and sacrificing their children, human sacrifice. And maybe that was a surprise ending of this. You know, if you really wanted to make a good argument, you could have started with this and say, okay, what's there to talk about? But this is really a powerful conclusion, at least, of the way that the chapter is formulated. But that's really an interesting point, and therefore the use of the word Yerusha, you're going to inherit from them, and then again they've killed their children, and therefore there's a lack of inheritance going on over there. You celebrate with your children. You go to one place and you celebrate and don't follow the Canaanite practices. So I'm going to say it again. This whole chapter is interesting. What is the main point? The main point is don't do what they do. What do? They worship many gods. How do they worship many gods? They even sacrifice also, going back to your point now, they also sacrifice something which was very valuable to them. They sacrifice their own children. But, well, no, I think that would be, don't miss that point. They're sacrificing what's most value in order to show. It's really the other way around. It's of supreme value, which is very a dramatic offering, which very good, very good. That's something that we have to come back to. And but what it keeps coming to is that there is this one place, which means that's really, I'm not sure if I should call it the subtext or the text, meaning that's what's going on over here. It's not just don't do what they do, but don't do what they do in all the places that they do it. It's one place, rules that God set up. So the shift over here should be clear. As I said, it's on a couple of levels, but what keeps coming back is HaMakom Yishev Yivchar Hashem, B'lishichno Tidrashu, and so on. Source number 3 goes into chapter Yud Gimel 13, Perek Yud Gimel, and over here it speaks about listening to a false prophet. Ki yakum bikir b'cha navi ocholim cholim v'natena lecha otom ofet, uva otom ofet, and it then goes on to say, don't listen to the false prophet, because what's going on over here in reality is that you're being tested by God. Ki minaseh Hashem elokeichem etchem. Ladat hayeshchem ovim et Hashem elokeichem b'chol levavchem b'chol nafshchem. Do you love God with all your hearts and all your souls? Acharei Hashem elokeichem tichu v'otot tirav v'mitzvotav tishmu v'kolot tishmu v'otot tavdu v'ubot hid bikun. So the focus over here is that even if a prophet's going to come and say, you know, all kinds of things, you don't listen. And then it goes on to speak about idolatry. Finally, it's getting to a situation of what's called an ear, hanidachet, an entire city that decides to follow idolatry, and the whole entire city needs to be destroyed. That started with Pasuk Yud Gimel, ki tishma bachat arecha asher Hashem lakecha noten lecha l'shevet shem le'mor yotzu anashim b'nei Belial. And I'm not going to read the whole thing. It ends up vidarashta v'chakarta v'sha'alta etei, if you're going to investigate this. And then it says that the city needs to be destroyed. It says don't even take any of the things from the city. V'itatel olam, the city should never be rebuilt. V'lo yidbak biyadcham umam min acherim, and don't take anything from the city. Afterwards, l'man yashuv mecharon apo, in order for God to return from his anger, v'natan lecha rachamim v'chakarta, in order for this balance to be recreated and God's compassion to return. So therefore, what have we really have seen? We've seen, don't follow their practices, don't follow idolatry, don't do horrific things that they do, rather follow God's rules, one place, create this nation which we follow the rules of God, one central place to worship. Now, to explain to you what it is that I'm thinking, and I'm so glad that you actually successfully identified one part of it. I remember reading some article at some point, which honestly did not do all that much for me. I mean, I like to read, fortunately, unfortunately. And it was not coming from a orthodox perspective regarding the nature of the book of Devarim. And what was interested, again, what they tend to do is they get rid of theology and they replace theology with politics, which means once you don't have theology, then why are all of these, meaning why is this law written and not that law written? So then everything becomes political intrigue, because there's no God involved, so therefore it's all human. So one of the things that was mentioned along the way is what is repeated and what's not repeated. So at some point, one of the things that I read noted that the Akedah is not mentioned in Sefer Devarim. So I just need to go back a little bit and just to think for a second. We don't necessarily know, as we start reading Sefer Devarim, what its agenda or what its purpose is. We know that Moshe is speaking, and there's certain things that that God tells him to say, if you read the very beginning of the book. There are certain laws that are repeated, certain laws that we never heard before. There's narrative which is repeated. There's narrative which is repeated, and we get a little bit of a more interesting sense. But for the most part, there is a minimal need to go back and to retell the stories of Bereshit, because those are really about Avot. But there is more of a need to go back and tell some of the stories having to do with Shemot, because that has to do more of the nation. Which means this expectation that every single biblical story should have been there, I think is just a wrong orientation. why would I have suspected that the sending away of Yishmael, for example, is something that should have been mentioned here? Why? Meaning it's not really to the point. Why would I have suspected the Akedah? And I can keep on going. Why when Avram is sitting by the tent, which means why? There is just so many of the stories that take place that this observation, oh, take a look, that's not mentioned, so therefore what? Which means, what is the therefore? So once you read things like this, the problem is then you can't unread them. And once you can't unread them, then they're there at some place in your mind. But thinking about the Akedah, it becomes really interesting because, well, Avram is actually called upon to do something which is described over here in a broader sense as being absolutely detestable, which God hates. Which means, if Avraham knew the entire Torah at that point, and God says, take him, and say, excuse me, but it says in Sefer Devarim that that's something that you don't like, so then how could you ask such a thing to be done, because this is something which is rejected. So that then becomes a little bit more interesting in terms of the propriety of telling of the story of the Akedah, which means I can say in a certain sense, don't worry, I'm going to come back again, I can say in a certain sense that introducing the Akedah would be counterproductive or not. And that's part of the issue. Which means the first part of it, when God says, go and take Yitzchak and offer him, well, it's actually right in front of us in source number four. V'yachadrim e'ela v'elukim nisa et Avram. Now, one of the things interesting about the word nisa is that we just now did see the word being used as well in terms of the Navi Shekir section, which was the next chapter. Ki menaseh Hashem elokeichem, that God tests us. God, why does God test us? In order to see, right? In order to see if we can pass these tests. But by the way, go back and read again now, Pasuk Dalid over there, back in Devarim, in source 3, Lo tishma el divrei naviyahu, ocho ol elecholei machalemahu, ki menaseh Hashem elokeichem etchem, ledat hayeshchem oavim et Hashem elokeichem b'chol levavchem uvachol nafshechem. The purpose of a test, in order to see if we really will follow God. So now, if you look at the beginning of the Akedah, v'yihi achar dirme eile, v'elokim nisat Avraham, right? So you have this word testing. Now, something else also happens. And it's at this point that things hopefully become a little bit more interesting. Vayom, and we're still in source 4, we're still in back in Bereshit, in Vayera. Vayomer, kachnat bincha yichidcha, asher hafta Yitzchak. Now, when the sacrifice of children is mentioned in the Canaanite religion, it left out the ahava, which actually is what caused a little bit of thinking on your part, at least. Hold it. Is this something of value or something which is not of value? But over here, the way it's framed, the child that you love and so on, which is more, sounds like that other part when we had that contrast. We celebrate with our children, and they are taking the children, and they're offering their children. But over here, take this child that you love, so that itself creates this disconnect and this complication for us. But I need to continue, because there's something else here that we may have missed. Asher hafta et Yitzchak v'lech lecha, and go el Eretz HaMoria. Go into Eretz HaMoria. Now, where in the world is Eretz HaMoria? V'leu sham la'ola el achad harim asher omar elecha. And go and take and offer him. Now, the word ola, we did have various times in our section. But go and take him to the place asher omar elecha, to the place that I'm going to tell you about. Now, this is going to be so obvious for us that it's almost like I don't need to say it. We know what that place is. And what is that location? What is that place? That is the place that one day will become revealed as Hamakom HaShevchar Hashem. Which means now, when I go back and think, hold it a second, this is far more interesting than we perhaps recognized before, that the section of the Akedah does speak to what's going on over here, because one of the things that Avram is going to have to do, just look at the next couple of verses. Avram goes and he starts to travel. Vayelech el hamakom asher amar lo Elokim. Vayomishli v'yisa Avram edin v'yaret hamakom. Vayavo el hamakom. So just notice that the word which is used again and again is hamakom, hamakom, hamakom. And you can almost say to me, well, the word could have been used. Well, it could have been other words used. It could have been, he sees Hamoria. No, this is Hamakom Asher Yivchar Hashem. This is the place which God has chosen. Which means, but there's another point. and that is that God does not tell Avraham with precision what this place is. And, you know, this is something which we had seen at some point, the argument between Rashi and the Ramban. Where was Avraham when he receives the command to go? How far is he? Which means, does he travel for 3 days, or does he travel for 1 day? Is he coming from Hebron, is he coming from Beersheba? But one of the things which the commentaries, again, based upon the Midrash, articulate is that Avraham needs to search for this place. L'shichno tidrishu uvata shama, which means that there is a microcosm taking place in terms of Avraham's experience, not just in terms of locating and serving on a particular place. It is the revealing of this place, and it's the search. That's really what it is. It's the search for this place, which means the shechno tidrishu, lidrosh, means to really to search for a place, to find the place. So Avraham, therefore, if I follow the approach that he travels for 1 day and then for 3 days he's looking for the makom, because what's he looking for? You know, especially you have Rashi bringing that midrash, and he looks up and he sees the cloud on top of the mountain. No, that's the holy place. He sees the holy place in front of him, which means Avraham's, you know, traveled around north, south, east, and west around the land of Israel, but he hasn't found the place yet. When he gets to the land of Israel, he needs to locate the particular place. Avraham's been in Israel for a while, but now he needs to locate the place, which means the locating of the place, which we're going to find out much later on by David HaMelech and Shmuel, and they're going to go and they're going to find the place where Shlomo is going to end up building the Beit HaMikdash, that Avraham is undergoing that same, again, Maaseh Avot Siman Lebanim, or the microcosm taking place where Avraham is searching for the place. Part of what takes place by the Akedah is that it is the establishment, it's the Chanukat HaBayit of what one day will be the Beit HaMikdash. So if you then want to go and ask a trick question, who's the first person who brings the Korban to the Beit HaMikdash? So you're going to start saying, was it Shlomo? Was it someone? No, it's Avraham Avinu was the first one who brings something over there. Now, what does he bring? Well, that's actually a lot more interesting, because he's traveling there. And if you really think about what's happening, it's the rejection of the Canaanite practice, that's like the Havamina, God being testing him, sort of like what we have over here in terms of the Navi Sheker, which, by the way, can create all kinds of complications and questions for us, but it's the same language. That's part of what I'm going to try to show, that he's being tested and being told to do that which the Canaanites do, and then says, but no, don't do what the Canaanites do, and rather, you're going to, you know, he brings this other animal over there, building the Mizbeach on this particular place, by the Makom, consecrating the Makom Mikdash, and therefore, this very Dvarim type of story is fascinating, because in a certain sense, the Akedah does encapsulate the story. Now, the issue is, not does it tell the story over again, but take a look, and this is what you can't see. So I apologize for this. If you look under by the next page, you have the top of the page and the bottom of the page. So I have it in front of me in color, which is absolutely cheating. So in Dvarim, okay, it starts off, and the first thing that you can see there, again, with the colors are terrible, I have a light green as Et Bincha, and at the very end, Et Bneihem ve'et Benoteihem, which is similar, which means it starts off, take your son, your only son, and that's how Perek Yud Bet ends, where, oh, they're the ones who killed their children. But that's not the only kind of turn of phrase which is used in both places. I'm going to pick something which is in a kind of a red, Vayavo Elamakom Asher, and here it says, Uvata Elamakom Asher, Yifchar Hashem, which means the Makom. How many times is the word Makom used? In the Devarim section, the word makom, mina makomahu, vahaya hamakom ishachar, ki imi makom, ba makom, hamakom. Over here, if you start looking, you see also hamakom, 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 and so on, as I've already pointed out. But it's not just that those phrases are used over here. There are other phrases as well, in terms of the olah being mentioned in both places. The Avraham story ends up with, it ends up, ki varecha varecha ve'et zarecha, you're going to have children, chorei shemayim, v'kachol asher osfat hayam, v'yaresh zarecha et shar ayvav, and you're going to inherit the land of your enemies, which is very just interesting in terms of that's what's being told over here. Which means the themes, and I'll just point this out, just What I'm using over here is it's found on a website which is called Al HaTorah, which allows you to take two chapters and to compare them. I just compared Perek Kaf Bet together with Perek Yud Bet, Perek Kaf Bet and Bereishit, Perek Yud Bet, and what you have in front of you is not just the multiple connections, it creates a thematic connection between the two, but dramatically the issue really becomes, what is the point? The point becomes that this is Avraham doing that which God is telling us to do, although you can just as easily argue, but it's also Avraham doing that which God tells us not to do. But that's in that other point when it says that God will test us. So God tests Avraham. I'm saying that's what's interesting. The point about the testing, 1 second, go down to the bottom of page 3, and there you have a comparison between Perek Kaf Bet, again, the Akedah story, and Devarim Yud Gimel, which is the next chapter. And again, once again, I'm not sure how clear you can see it, but you have not just a similar words which are being used, you also have almost an identical sequence of the words which are being used, where you have Nelcha, Ohavim, Telchu, Minaseh, and over here you have Nasa, Ahavta, Valach, Ve'elech, See the place Mirachok, O Harachokim Mimcha, Nelcha, Vayelech. You just, and then at the very end, you have Yomabi Nishbati. Over there, you have the Nishba, Vihir Bechav, Arbe, Arbe, Abitzcha. It's not just that the colors are similar, although admittedly there are less. The sequence of them are almost exactly the same. It's as if it's using a template and comparing this. But again, this is Perek Kaf Bet with Perek Yud Gimel. So I put the two of them together. What you end up having is an incredible amount of connection between the two chapters that we read in Re'eh and just that one chapter in Bereshit. But I don't want to stop there, because there's another point. And the other point is, and this I believe would have been a little bit less obvious to us. I figured it all out before I... Why did I compare those two chapters? Because I knew that it was there. I just wanted to create the visual that you can easily see it.
Make it obvious now.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's obvious.
Now it's obvious, I hope.
No.
You have to look at the colored one. It's a lot more dramatic. The other thing I was thinking of was the destruction of the city, destruction of the Ir HaNidachat. In Avraham's life story, there's also a destruction of the city. And that stone... And that is really what I have on page 4. On page 4, I have on the right side in both of those places, Perek Yud Tet, where the Malachim come to stone, compared to Perek Yud Bet, and then Perek Yud Tet compared to Perek Yud Gimel, which means it's what I'm really doing is I'm taking two different... That's very good already. So what is interesting over here as well is just the words which are being used again and again in the two sections. Again, some of them you can claim, or how do you avoid them, but there's just too many. Again, it goes back to this cluster argument. There's just too many of these connections in both of these sections. The other thing which some of the commentators actually do, by the way, the next thing that I then did was I went searching for the name of Avraham among all the commentaries in this week's Parsha. How many times does Avraham come up in Perek Yud Bet among all the Mefarshim? How many times does Avraham come up in Perek Yud Gimel by all the Mefarshim? But the answer to that is 25 and 13. That's the answer. And not all of them were necessarily to the point, but some of them were. But one of the things that I do want to point out is that, again, to go back really where we ended up, at the end of source number 3, what we had was destruction of the city. Over here we have stone. And at the end it talks about not to take anything from the city. And by the way, remember that the king of stone wants to give Avram things. He doesn't want anything from stone. He doesn't want to take anything from there. Okay. But then it says, the man yashuv Hashem micharon apo v'natan lecha rachamim v'rachamcha v'hirbeh kasher nishbata lavotecha, that this creation of rachamim. Now that's actually very interesting. Part of what I was thinking of as well was Avraham's argument against of the destruction, which means, okay, let me be a little bit clearer about this. one of the things that it says over here is that when you hear about a city, it's going back to Pasuk Yud Gimel, when you hear about a city which is not serving God, right? What does it say? That, and they're serving other gods. V'dorashta v'chakarta v'sha'alta heitev v'inei emet nachona davar. So I was just thinking about that compared to Avram Avinu's negotiation with God regarding the destruction of stone. That Avram is told about it and he's questioning. He's inquiring. He's looking into this and he's asking. Now you could tell me that I'm getting a little carried away. I'm fine with that. But this was actually one of the points when I looked at the various Mefarshim, and if you want, I can tell you who some of them were. I don't know how interesting that is. Some of the Mefarshim speak about this last verse over here, this idea of rachamim, that even when a city needs to be destroyed, we can't lose our humanity. They need to be destroyed because of the horrific things which are taking place over there, but we can't lose our Avraham's identity. Descendants of Avraham are people that have rachamim. So that is where Avraham gets introduced by at least some of the Mefarshim. The reason for this is there's actually a Gemara that makes this point about the descendants of Avraham are the ones that have rachamim. They have a couple of different traits. And therefore, the rachamim being thrown in at the very end is interesting in terms of this comparison with the destruction of stone. The destruction of stone is there because of, as I said, not just the larger thematic issue, but it's all of the various linguistic connections between the two, but it's really both. The other place that a number of the Mefarshim note this is what I already mentioned before, is by the searching out for the place which was holy, that Avram needs to search and to find Har HaMoriah. So therefore, v'lishichno tidrishu, to go and to search out and to try to find this place where the Shekhinah is going to rest, to try and search out this place where one day the Mishkan will be built. So that just, I'm going to say this again, this becomes fascinating because Avraham does that. It's not just that God promises in the future you will get this land, is that Avraham actually takes those footsteps to find that place. And then Avram looks for the place. And then Avram identifies the place. And then, as I said, this is what becomes far more interesting, is that Avraham is being tested, as we see one of the elements here, to do a Canaanite practice in the sense of sacrificing a child. And then we have this dramatic no. And then Avram stops. And therefore, that therefore becomes a shift whereby family, I mean, that was really became the difference. Do you sacrifice your family or do you celebrate with your family? So therefore, that shift then takes place instead of sacrificing the family, celebrating with the family, but not just that. Where do you celebrate with the family? You celebrate with the family on this particular place, which Avraham is identifying and offering this first offering by this Makom Asher Bachar Hashem, and the Makom Asher Bachar Hashem is something which was identified by Avraham. So therefore, I'm going to go back and say it again. Is the Akedah mentioned by name in the Sefer Devarim? So you can certainly say no. But is it referenced? Are there linguistic connections? Are there thematic connections? That becomes a completely different question, because that would seem to be that there's a little bit more of that than we necessarily would have suspected. And it's as if to say that the Akedah is there in the background is like some kind of a thought, which then allows us to understand what's really being spelled out over here. And if we're going to inherit the land, yes, we inherit it from the inhabitants, but we're also inheriting it ultimately because of the actions of Avraham. So sometimes maybe we forget. It's not just that God promised Avraham, and it's all in a passive sense. There's a very active sense which took place over here. And as I said, if you go back and you look at the things that I sent to you in terms of the visuals of all of those linguistic connections between these two chapters, again, the chapter of destruction of stone and the whole connection with the Ir HaNidachat on the one hand, and on the other hand, the Akedah, and comparing it to these two chapters over here, what you realize is this high concentration of linguistic connections and thematic connections between events which are taking place back in Parshat Vayera and what is being commanded to us over here in Parshat Re'eh. And then finally, you obviously have to note the obvious, and that one is called Re'eh and one is called Vayera, and they're both about seeing something, and therefore what they're seeing is we're really seeing the exact same thing.